Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison, in for Gina Kaufman. When you think of World War II and military aircraft, you probably think of the pilots who took them into battle, but of course there wouldn't be any taking off, there wouldn't be any flying at all, if it weren't for the people who built them. Many of them women, very young women in some cases, back home who, out of duty and maybe the need for a job, went to build planes. Today we're joined by a couple of those so-called Rosies from right here in Kansas City. Norma Bowers worked in the tool sharpening area at Pratt & Whitney, and she joins us in our studio. Norma, welcome to Central Standard.
Well, thank you for having me.
And we also have with us by phone Mary White. She did electrical work at North American. Mary, thank you for being with us.
It's my pleasure.
Well, we look forward to hearing from both of you, a little of your stories. Let me start with you, Norma. What did you do during the war on these planes?
I helped to build the engines themselves.
Okay.
But in order to cut the parts for the engine, you had to have good sharp tools. So I did some of the sharpening of the tools that they did to make the parts for the engines.
I see. Now, I know I've been taught well, and I know it's not polite to ask a lady her age. So instead, I'll ask how old you were when you were doing this work 70 years ago.
I was 18 at that time.
Wow. So right out of school.
Yes. Right out of high school.
How
I
did
went
you...
down on Monday.
You went down
on Monday?
And
put in my application after I graduated on Friday.
Wow. And why did you do this?
Well, I needed the money, but my brother was in the Navy in the South Pacific, so I felt an urge to do something to contribute to that.
And Mary White, is your story similar? How old were you when you started working on planes?
I was also 18, and I lived in the country, and I wanted to go to the city and work in the war plant because my schoolmates, my friends, my boyfriends, neighbors, they were all sent away. They had all either volunteered or enlisted, and I just felt it was my duty to do my part.
So even though you also could use the money, there was a real sense of obligation out of to do it.
Oh, patriotism was at a high. It was like there was no sacrifice too big for our troops, you know.
So, Norma, what was that like as an 18-year-old to take your application down there and say, I want to work in the plant? Was that happening a lot at that point?
Oh, yeah. There were a lot of people going to work there. And they were hiring a lot of people that had never worked before in a place.
It sounds like pretty specialized work, especially for such a young woman.
And thankfully, I had steady hands at that time. So I could do the job well.
Mary, what sort of work did you end up doing?
I worked on the instrument panel of the B-25 missile bomber at North American Aviation in Fairfax. And I climbed a scaffold into the cockpit, soldered the wires on the instrument panel. Someone would come and check it, and then I'd get down and go to the next one. And that's what I did all day long.
How long did you work at North American Aviation, Mary?
I worked there till they closed.
And when was that?
You know, I don't remember. I think it was 1945.
So about just after the war ended, they closed the plant.
Uh-huh.
And how about you, Norma? How long did this job last for you?
It was about 18 months because it closed, well, nearly a little over. But they shut the plant down the day they signed the peace.
You knew you wouldn't need those planes anymore.
Nope.
Right.
And was that Mary, when that happened, was that a joyful occasion because the war was over, or were you at least a little bit sad because you'd felt good about your service?
I just went to another place in Fairfax and went to work there, and I have no idea what I was making. I think it was bombs, but it was top secret. It was called Arion.
That's really interesting. You didn't know what you were making?
No, it was top secret. I have no idea what it was, and we never could find out. By the way, did you know that I think it's interesting that the plant where I worked, North American Aviation, was specially built for this purpose. They built that out of concrete and steel. It had no windows, and it was one of the first buildings to be air-conditioned.
How interesting. I did not know that. Is the building still there? Do you know?
I believe it is, but I don't know who owns it. I think, I hate to say, but I think it's maybe one of the automobile companies.
I really don't know. Down in Fairfax. That would make sense. Well, hey, I want to invite our listeners to be part of this conversation, too. If you also were a woman who became part of the war effort by working here back home, or maybe your mother was, or even your grandmother, we'd love to hear your stories. So join us by calling 816-235-2888. That's 235-2888. Even if you just have a question for Mary and Norma, you can call us or you can tweet at us. We're at KCURCST. So I guess, Norma and Mary, I want to know about your view of the world and how maybe it has changed since that day. Obviously, you went there and people really valued the work you were doing. Do you feel like the same thing would happen today if there was a call that went out for people to go head down to the factories, 18-year-old young people?
What? I don't.
Say more about that, Mary.
I think that World War II emotionally, everybody was united for the common cause, and I don't really think that can happen again. I don't know why, but I just, maybe it's my age. I'm old.
Well, you seem to be doing all right, Mary. Norma, what do you think?
I think that it could happen, but I think it would have to be something like the bombing of Hawaii.
Mm, like an American city have to get bombed again.
That was the thing, as far as I was concerned, that was so terrible. And I wanted to do anything I could to bring an end to it.
Was it also the sense, you both mentioned that all of the, that men who were close to you, members of your family or your neighbors, they got drafted. They went off to war.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You weren't drafted, obviously, but you felt like you needed to do something. The fact that there's not been a draft since Vietnam, does that change this sense of obligation that others back home feel?
That's possible, but I think we are destined to work toward being more patriotic and proud of the fact that we are Americans. We're members of
We have to be more patriotic, Bill.
We
need to be more patriotic.
Do you think that today's 18, 20-year-old women, and men, for that matter, understand what you were experiencing back then, Norma?
I think possibly they can't understand it completely. But I think that possibly we can, if we put the effort into it. Our generation has to put some effort into making us feel patriotic and proud of the fact that we are Americans, and we have a privilege that we need to fight for if necessary.
She's right. You know, my grandchildren have taken this so seriously. They just think that their grandmother is famous because she's Rosie the Riveter, and there's so few left, and they just think it's the most wonderful thing in the world that you and I did.
Well, you know, Mary, I wonder about that, too, that Rosie the Riveter is almost a cliche. Do you appreciate that imagery and being called that?
Oh, yes. Yes, because it gives me, it tells the world that I did my part during the war.
And I see Norma nodding her head as well.
Yeah. And another thing, the thing during that time, and I think Norma will agree with me, there was a lot of rationing. And we had to do without a lot of things. But nobody complained. Hmm. No one ever complained. They did without. They sacrificed for the cost.
Norma, you're trying to jump in there.
Well, it taught me a great deal about being conservative, and to this day, I hate to throw away food because...
Oh, that, yeah.
And my kids will say, you don't have to keep that. I said, yes, I do. It's food. I cannot throw it away.
my grandmother has who has a couple of decades on you guys, your spring chickens, but she is the same way. She will eat every bit on her plate. I do want to ask actually though about the fact that you were women doing work, physical work that many would say at that time before the war was men's work. What we wouldn't consider it such a big deal today for women to be working in that kind of setting, but how strange did it seem to you back then, Norma?
Well, it was a first.
Mary?
It was a first.
And did it feel odd? Did you feel out of place?
No.
I don't think so, but the first job I had was in a warehouse, filling orders and with huge baskets, having to lift big, heavy things. All the men were gone. It was all women except the supervisor.
But the man, the supervisor was a man, huh?
Yes.
All right, Norma.
I felt like it was a privilege. I didn't feel like I was doing anything that was outstanding. I felt like it was a privilege to be able to have a job of that kind, and to help the war effort. And later, as I went to work for the airlines, I was in the purchasing department, and I had the opportunity to buy the parts for the Pratt & Whitney 2800 engines that I had helped to build.
Oh!
So that gave me a great deal of pride in what I did during the war.
Oh, how wonderful.
And I do want to talk a little bit after a little while here about kind of your lives after this, because this was such a formative period in your life, but you have had a few decades since then, too. I want to take a call, though, at 816-235-2888 from someone else who knows a little about this. Let's talk to Naomi in Kansas City. Naomi, welcome to Central Standard.
Well, thank you. I worked there I started in 42 and was there until 45 in August. In fact, I exited from the plant. I think we were off a week after the war was over.
Where did you work, Naomi?
At the bomber plant at Fairfax.
Okay, same place as Mary, it sounds like.
Kansas City. Yeah, I saw Mary. Mary was in that first class we were in. Mary White,
well,
I remember her. Uh-huh. In that class, that we started in the class for about 6 weeks before we went to work.
And Naomi, how important was the experience of being a Rosie the Riveter for the rest of your life?
It was very important. And about the 18th of, I do not remember what month, February. It was in the Kansas City paper, big write-up, and they contacted me and they came out, took pictures of me, and there were about four or five pictures of people that had worked at the plant. And there was a big article in the Kansas City paper on that. And they interviewed every one of us, and they put it in the paper. And the pictures, some of our pictures were in there. Imagine some of them probably.
Naomi, what's your longest enduring memory of having worked in the plant during the war?
Well, I worked nights, and we had we first didn't have a ride, you know. We had to go down by train, streetcar and bus and to get there. And we left, like, my sister and I both worked there. And my brother worked there for a short time before he was drafted. But I was there from the time it started until the war was over. And I think we worked nights all the time, except the last year when the war was coming down, and so they cut out the night shift, and then I went on the day shift. I was 20 years old when I worked there.
Naomi, thank you so much for taking a few minutes to call in and share a little of your memories. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Thanks. Naomi mentioned that she had to take the streetcar to get there. There weren't cars being sold during this time. Is that right, Norma?
You could.
No.
There was no market for... I mean, there was no cars available because Detroit was making war products.
Right.
So
yeah, I lived at 27th and Forest.
All right.
And I rode streetcars and trolleys all the way to Fairfax.
That
and
was
you probably did
quite a
too.
Trip.
Mm-hmm. Let's take one more call from Imani in Kansas City, who has a comment. Imani, welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you so much for taking my call. I first want to thank you, ladies, for your service not only to our country, but also to the whole world. I'm glad that someone recognizes your value. And the reason I called is that I have started a new nonprofit, a STEMS program, and I want to encourage girls to see that this type of work is something. Engineering is something that girls can do, that they can go into. And when I was developing my presentation for the STEM project, I Googled women with tools. And the only thing that came up was women with lipstick and makeup brushes. And this is the concept. This is the concept that we have in terms of girls working with tools. And I know a lot of girls work with crafts. They use soldering irons, but in terms of working with electronics and doing the fantastic things that you ladies were doing, I hope that, you know, Kevin Wilmot or somebody like that is listening, and that he recognizes that this is something that needs to be captured for posterity. I want to thank you so much, ladies, for everything that you've done.
Well, it was our pleasure.
I was certainly pleased to be able to do it. It helped me to get started on a career with the airlines, which is one of the things that I enjoyed the most.
Oh, I bet.
Imani, thank you so much for your call. I appreciate it.
Well, can I make one more comment?
Sure, quickly.
Well, I noticed that the ladies said that they, you know, were into conservation, conserving things, and riding the streetcar. And it's almost like we've come full circle in talking about sustainability. And even though we're on another stage in history, I think we need to revisit those values that you ladies have so honorably upheld.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Very nice.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Imani.
Bye-bye.
That's a good word. We appreciate it. Well, let's take a little bit of a break. When we come back with more of Central Standard, we'll continue our conversation with Norma and Mary about their experience as young women helping put World War II airplanes in the air. We do want to hear from you. Call us at 816-235-2888. That's 235-2888 with your questions, your comments, and stay tuned. Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison, in for Gina Kaufman. Today we're talking about the aircraft of World War II, and specifically, the women who built them. These real-life Rosie the Riveters lived and worked in Kansas City, and they're still here. Norma Bowers worked in the tool sharpening area at Pratt & Whitney, and Mary White, who joins us by phone, did electrical work on the control panels of planes at North American Aviation. Norma, you've mentioned that you went back to work almost immediately after the war, working for the airlines. How did your experience of working as a young woman in the plants help you in your career?
It gave me a sight into what work was and what schedules were and what assignments were, and how important it was to do whatever you were assigned to do. I think that's one of the most valuable lessons one can learn, is to do what you're assigned to do.
Mary, what did you do after the war? Oh, Mary, wait, hold on, yeah. Mary. Mary, there you are. Try again. What did you do after the war?
I went to work at Aerion. And then when they closed, I went to work at Sears and Roebuck. And that's where I got my husband.
Well, okay. I'm glad something good came of that.
Well, I was a USO member also. And I bet she was too.
Yeah, remind us what that means, that you were a USO member.
United Service Organization. It was for the troops when they were traveling. A place where they could come and visit and dance with girls and get snacks, a little recreation, and I also stood by the railroad tracks when the troop trains came through. All the windows were open, and all the guys knew people would be standing on the, you know, on the sideline, and they would wave and throw kisses and throw out their addresses. And
you know, it strikes me listening to both of you that this really, it was a job, and it was even a need for the country, but it was more than that for you. It was a reflection of who you were, and you were making a statement about what was important by doing this.
That's true. We were making a statement, and it made us feel good.
I think that it's important for everyone to learn to do something responsible and something worthwhile, because that's what makes your life worthwhile. I now have a grandson that's in the Navy, and I'm very proud of him.
I bet.
And he's in Japan, and he's re-upped again, so it's time that this whole country came up with being proud of being a United States.
I agree.
Well, let's take.
I don't think they're proud enough.
That's right.
Norma and Mary worked in factories. They worked after that. They've done other things through their lives to show their support. Let's listen to some callers about how they have been part of this effort. 816-235-2888. Hugh is calling us from Bonner Springs. Hugh, thanks for waiting.
Sure.
So you also did some work when these planes were being built.
No, I'm after the fact, but one of the ladies mentioned that she didn't know if the North American building was still there, and it is not, but General Motors built cars and F-85 airplanes there in the 1950s, and so I worked at the Fairfax plant starting there in 1952, and we built Buick Olds and Pontiac cars as well as F-85 fighter planes there all at the same time.
Kind of an interesting combination.
You mean the building is no longer there, or it's
used? No, it's not there any longer. They built a new plant there in the 1980s, and after that, they tore the old North American plant down.
Oh, dear, I didn't know that.
Well, thank you, Hugh, for that information. Hugh, if I can ask you a question, I guess I'm curious, you know, you've been hearing the memories and the stories of these ladies who worked in a time of war, and as women, you obviously were working after the war and building cars as well as military planes. How was your experience different, do you think?
Well, I was too young to go to service, and so during the World War II era there, I actually went to Detroit, and I worked for a concern called Gray Marine Motors, and we packaged spare parts for landing craft to be sent into the South Pacific. And so that was my...
That is interesting.
After the war, I went back to Arkansas, which was where I came from, and they had thousands of planes that they had brought in to Walnut Ridge Air Base, which had been a war base. And then those planes were salvaged. And you're speaking to the man about the artwork on those planes. And the people that was in charge there cut a lot of that art off. They just cut sections of that plane out to preserve that artwork. And
interesting.
So
So some of it got preserved after all. Well, Hugh, I really appreciate you calling in and sharing some of your experience. Thanks so much.
Sure, you're welcome.
Mary, I wonder, Hugh worked in, sounds like, the same factory, even though it was repurposed, that you did after the war. Do you know, did any of the women you worked with actually continue to work in that in the plane building business after the war, or did men come back and take those jobs?
I really don't know. I guess when the men came home, but as we all know, jobs were not available for them. They couldn't even get into the colleges. Some of them. My husband had to move to Oklahoma to get into college when he got back from the service.
Wow. All right. Well, let's get another perspective here from Alan. He's calling us from Leavenworth, Kansas. Alan, welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you very much.
What were your thoughts as you listened to Norma and Mary?
When I listened to those two women, I view them as pioneers in a revolution because they proved through their voluntary service that women can do anything. Given the training and the opportunity, women could really do anything, and the amazing thing is it was through their sweat and blood and tears that my mother, my wife, and now my daughter have the opportunity to do things that in the past they never could have done before.
Thank you very much.
Well,
that's quite a nice compliment.
It's beautifully said, Alan.
Very nice.
Norma, do you feel like a revolutionary? I look at you. You don't look very rebellious, I will say that.
I kind of like to take life as it comes and make the best of it. And I think that's one of the things that we learned during World War II. Face up to what the world is out there and make the best you can of it.
Mary, you know, do those sorts of life lessons follow you as well? Are you a different person because of this experience during the war?
I think that I learned to accept whatever the world was doing or handing me at the time. I learned to accept it. I have never been rebellious about anything. I've always been contented and happy with my surroundings and pleased that I feel so pleased that we do have peace right now to a certain point. It wasn't like World War II. And I just pray that wars could be over, period.
Well, let's get another call in here from Herman in Leawood. Herman, welcome to the program.
Hello there. How are you today?
Doing well. You have a family connection to the Rosie the Riveters?
Yes, Rosie the Welder, I guess. My mother worked at North American Aviation during World War II. She's now 96 years old. She's still alive.
Wow.
And she maybe one of the first women to want to rebel and be a leader or something like that. She met my father there before they were married and thereafter they got married. But in the meantime, he taught her how to weld. So she was, I believe, one of the few women aluminum welders at the time. He was a teacher. He taught and he welded too. That's why he went all over the world doing that. But that's why they wouldn't let him in the military. But anyway, her story is that she found out that her setup man, the fellow who was putting the parts together so she could then do the welding, and was not a welder, was making more money. So she went to her boss and asked for a raise, and he looked at her and said, "Young lady, be glad you have a job and get back to work."
And he said that because she was a lady.
Right, mm-hmm. Exactly.
Well, and so, thank you so much for that, Herman. And Mary, I do want to ask you about that, that you were breaking new ground, you were doing revolutionary work, but you were still women in what was in many ways a man's world, right?
Yes.
Did you suffer some consequences as a result of that?
No.
You don't.
I was always very proud.
So the wage discrepancy that Herman mentioned didn't bother you?
No.
How about you, Norma?
I don't know if it existed where I was.
Norma and I got a better wage when we worked at the war plant.
That's
than
right.
Than we would have got if we were working in any other.
In any other job. That's correct.
Yeah. So, no, I've never, but I'm not a fighter. I accept things the way they are. So.
Did either of you ever get to meet any of the men who flew the planes that you built?
I met some of the pilots from Capital Airlines that flew the DC-4s.
Was that an especially interesting experience?
Because when I was working at the ticket counter, the pilots would come in, and I had a chance to talk to them about it. And that was interesting.
I'm glad you asked me that.
Well, Mary, I'm so sorry we're actually out of time now, but I'm glad you got to meet them too. Well, thank you both for being here. I really am sorry that that's all the time we have today. Norma Bowers worked at Pratt & Whitney. Mary White worked at North American Aviation. You two have been delightful. It's been so good to meet you.
Well, it's been such a pleasure and such an honor to be here.
Thank you, Mary.
Thank you for inviting us.
You can listen back to any of the conversations you've heard today on our show by going to kcur.org/centralstandard later today. You can also sign up for our podcast while you're there. Don't forget to check our Twitter feed for some of the pictures of the fighter plane and bomber art that we talked about earlier. Tomorrow, we'll explore life after professional baseball. We'll be joined by Royals broadcaster Rex Hudler and one of the few players to play with the Brooklyn and LA Dodgers, plus the Yankees, Fred Kipp. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross. I'm Brian Ellison. Stick around now for Up to Date, coming up next.